Beyond the darkness, beyond the human evolution, is Khan, a genetically superior tyrant. Exiled to a barren planet, banished by a starship commander he is destined to destroy. Left for dead, he has survived.
I'll chase him round the moons of Nibia and round the Antares maelstrom and round perdition's flames before I give him up. There she is! There she is!
Captain.
The enemy major power!
A few shots, sir.
Not enough against their shields.
The base is starboard.
Scotty, I need warp speed in 3 minutes or we're all dead.
I've done far worse than kill you. I've hurt you. And I wish to go on hurting you. I shall leave you as you left me. Marooned for all eternity. Buried alive. Buried alive.
Sean! Sean!
At the end of the universe lies the beginning of vengeance. Star Trek II. The Wrath of Khan.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of the Film and Water Podcast, proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm your host, Rob Kelly, and this is a very special episode to celebrate Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan's 40th anniversary this year. I have assembled an all-star team on the bridge to do a full-length commentary track for this movie. Joining me is the irredeemable Shag. Hi, Shag.
Commanding a podcast is my first best destiny. Anything else is a waste of material.
Chris Franklin.
I did what you asked. I stayed away.
And our very and the network's own David O. Selznick, Corey Musa. Hi, Corey.
Hi, Rob. Hi, everybody. It's really exciting to be here. I don't have a witty thing to introduce myself with.
Kepla.
So that's fine. So, okay, everybody. I mean, any of you listening to this, you know Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. We don't need a big preamble. So we're going to jump right into it. So if you want to watch this movie along with us, we're going to count down and we're going to do 3, 2, 1. And then we're going to say go. And we're all going to start watching this wonderful movie together. By the way, we're going to be watching the original cut of Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, not the director's cut. So, all right, if everybody's ready. Like I said, we will count down and we will get rolling. So if everybody's ready, we will count down. And then when I say go, we will start the movie. So 3, 2, 1, go.
Gulf Western Company.
Now, this movie came out on June 4th, 1982. Before we get too deep into the movie, because there's going to be a lot of quoting going on, I just want to ask you all one question. Like, how did you first interact with this movie? Because for a lot of people that I've talked to, they hadn't seen any Star Trek until they saw this movie. This was a lot of people's first intro to Star Trek. So, Corey, I'm going to start with you. When did you first see Star Trek II?
I first saw Star Trek II when I was... I was in middle school, I think, and my parents bought me the box set for all of Star Trek movies on VHS. And at the time, that box set included like Star Trek 1 through 5, I think. And so this was my favorite movie in the box set, and I would just watch this one over and over and over again.
Chris, what about you?
I had started watching Star Trek around this time. My dad finally convinced me to watch Star Trek, and we watched it together, but we didn't see this one in the theater. But I did have a book and record set of it.
Were you too scared?
No, I was not too scared. For whatever reason, we just didn't go see this, but not like Star Wars. But I had the book and record set, so I was prepared when Star Trek III came out. I knew the story, even though I hadn't seen the movie yet. I went and saw Star Trek III before I saw Star Trek II, the actual movie. So,
Chad?
I had just started watching Star Trek before this. My dad told, and it may have been before Star Trek The Motion Picture. I don't remember which. Either way, I saw this thing in the theater. That's the answer you're looking for. I saw it in the theater. And I had only been watching Star Trek for a little while before that. But I remember at age, you know, less than 10 years old, to this day, I still remember being so excited about going to this with the family. I mean, I was over the moon that we were going to the theater to see this movie. So it still holds the same energy.
Yeah, I did too. I saw it in the theater. I can remember going with a bunch of friends to see it. And I've seen every Star Trek movie in the theater, every single one. I remember my dad took me and my sister to go see the first movie. And I remembered liking it just because it was Star Trek. You know, I wasn't terribly discerning. It was just cool. There was more Star Trek. Because that was one of the things he and I, you know, kind of did together, independent of my mom. Like, we watched Star Trek together on Saturdays and stuff. So it was exciting to see the movie. But I remember going to see this one with friends and just was like, oh, this is just the greatest thing I've ever seen. So, okay, all right. The perfect timing. We've just got our directed by Nicholas Meyer credit. Now, this card here in the 23rd century, I always feel like that's Nicholas Meyer's way of inviting people who are not familiar with Star Trek. Because why else do you, I mean, doesn't everybody know when this takes place? Presumably, he's thinking there's a new audience, and he's telling them, he's kind of setting the stage. This is the 23rd century, because you don't know.
I always took it to be sort of a nod to Star Wars is popular. Not like a nod to them, but just like Star Wars set the stage by saying a long time ago, so maybe we should do that.
Hmm.
Okay. That makes sense, actually, Shag.
Yeah, it also establishes that the 23rd century is the century in which Star Trek takes place. That had never been completely locked down before this, apparently.
Really? Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's true. I was just reading about that earlier today, and it might have been important to do that because we're talking about what time Khan came from in this movie. So we really want to know what year it is.
Even though they kind of fudge that too, because it should have been 300 years and they keep saying 200.
200 still. Years. Yeah. We are such nerds. All right.
So is Kirstie Alley known at this point for anything, or is this her big thing?
It says introducing Kirstie Alley.
Good point.
It's such a big credit for her to have gotten on such a big movie. This is like a crazy introduction to have into your career. But at the same time, they weren't counting on this movie being quite the hit that it was going to be. They gave them like half the budget of the first movie to make this movie. And I feel like a lot of why this movie is so great came out of needing it to fit into the budget that they had. So,
well, that's why they brought, was it Harv Bennett in?
Harv Bennett, who was successful. A TV guy. He was
well, that's
TV
why
guy.
They did it. Yeah. He was used to working with a smaller budget. That's what all the interviews say. That's why they brought him in.
Yeah, they took Roddenberry off, basically. Roddenberry's the one who put them way over budget on the motion picture. So for this one, his name was like in credit only, really. He didn't have much to do with it.
Yeah, that Harv Bennett said they gave him, what'd you think of the first movie? And could you make a movie for, like whatever the percentage was? He's like, I gotta make 5 movies.
That's how I feel when I, as a producer, when I see some of these budgets, I'm like, I could literally make 25 movies for that price.
Sulu's dead. Oh, what? No. That's a bold move to kill Sulu off in the beginning of your movie. Wow. Oh, no.
What?
What is happening? They're killing everybody off.
At least all the ensigns are still alive.
What a gangbuster opening this is.
The neighbor from Christmas Vacation is still alive, so we're good. Yeah. So
gosh. Nope. There it is. Spock's, there we go.
Dramatic performance.
All right, nerds. You happy?
All the early press said the Spock was going to die in this movie. There it is. Sorry, spoilers.
Captain Kirk will never have a better intro than this scene. That is true. The most heroic. Look at that. Look at that shot.
Well, the music too, which you're not, because I've got an earbud and I'm listening. Like the music is like that builds it too. So
look
good.
At that. And then they the lights.
Like he's in an 80s hair metal video right there.
You know what? This inspired all the hair metal videos. This is before MTV. They were trying to be this.
This is when Shatner had hair.
No, we didn't.
No, probably not. I mean, yeah, I know the stories. We don't need to talk about that. This is Kirstie Alley's moment. This is Lieutenant Savick's moment. Savick, who was in the first script written that included Savick, was a man.
Mm.
Did you guys know that?
I know that.
I did not. And do they say anywhere in the film that she's part Romulan? Or do we just have to assume that she's Vulcan and we learn the Romulan thing in extra canon?
It didn't make it into the movie. They
never is what is that in like one of the novelizations that she's part Romulan?
In the third movie, she says it. She calls Kruge my lord. In that movie.
That's Klingon though.
Oh, that Klingon, excuse me. Right, right. But I mean no, they don't get into it here. They do not.
Yeah, but I am right. She is half Romulan though, right? Isn't that, or am I imagining that?
No, yeah, she was supposed to be. Yeah,
okay.
It doesn't make it into this version at least. And that's in a jumping ahead, but there's a scene later where Shatner's like, should she be acting like that? She's a Vulcan. And then Nick Meyer said, yeah, but she's part Romulan, so you don't know how she would react to this.
I love Shatner getting involved in the screenplay. It's like, mind your own business, Bill. Just do the scene. Jesus Christ.
Hey, he's got percentage points, man. He has since 1966. So, you know.
Well, what made me think of that was like her first, one of her earliest lines is she goes, damn. Like she's upset. And that's clearly she's showing emotion. Yeah.
I mean, this script was an amalgamation of like four other screenplays that were all turned in, and Nick Meyer, I guess, took all of them and basically came up with this. Ugh. And Nick Meyer watched all of the Star Trek movies, but he's not like a huge fan. So, you know, he needed a lot of people to help him fill in the blanks. So this scene, guys, this shot in this
garden, sort of
garden,
like
this cinematic atrium thing. I just learned this earlier today. This is like a very tiny piece of set. There's almost nothing in this. They needed to build something that looked cinematic. So like they basically went to Home Depot and bought this giant globe for like $15, filled it with plants. They put a bunch of plants around the rest of this set.
They just TV budget, it. Man.
Yeah, no, this
but
is
it looks great.
Funny. It looks fantastic.
Oh, Shag, I know you're excited here.
So I got to talk about this. So we're in Kirk's apartment, right? With all the weapons and stuff. And like everyone loves to take a shot at this apartment being like, oh my God, Kirk, what is this ridiculous thing? Right. And then other people say, oh no, Kirk's just got like a corporate apartment. It's decorated. No guys, I get this. This is the 50-year-old guy who's just gotten divorced. And he thinks this is the cool way to decorate to get chicks. I mean, literally,
look at that view. Of course it is. This apartment is totally meant to close the deal. That's exactly what this apartment
is. But he thinks guns and clocks and ships is going to score with the girls because he doesn't know any better. Because he spent his whole life committed to one lady, which was the Enterprise. Now they're divorced. And this is what happens with divorce guys. They make these kinds of quote unquote manly apartments. It's totally what it is.
The apartment really is not made up of any element we know of his personality. It's like, what are all these things around him? We never saw him with a fascination for like ships in a bottle or something or
guns, really.
Yeah.
That was Sulu.
If you're going to go to Picard's apartment and see Shakespeare on the shelf, like I get it. That's Picard.
I think this is who Kirk is in his off time, though. I mean, we always see him on. We don't see him either. It's screwing people or he's
this
working.
Totally reminds me of what like my father's apartment looked like when I was a kid, who was like just a single man like
there
in the 50s. Yeah, yep. No, it was like right around the same time. He even had this freaking haircut. So this is probably is this the first time we ever hear of Romulan ale in this scene, or is it mentioned in an episode of the original series ever?
Chris?
I don't think it was mentioned before. And if it was, then let us know in the comments. I think this is it. I think Corey, I think you're right.
I think it's like pretty cool. This is the thing that becomes like a continued part of Trek lore. It's something you can order at like Quark's bar at the Star Trek theme parks. It looks a lot like Blue Gatorade.
Yeah. And it's a major plot point for Star Trek VI.
Yeah.
So, also by Nicholas Meyer. So
yes. I mean, yes, the ale comes into play. Do you think it tastes like a beer then? I always thought it tasted more like vodka.
It's blue. It's got to taste like blue, right? But before we leave this scene, I got to mention, the thing I love about this scene is seeing two old friends hanging out together outside of work. Because that's something, that's awesome. Again, you don't think about with Star Trek. It's what I want in my life when I get old, is to live in a city with some friends. All my friends are online, but live in a city with a friend and hang out with them after work and just, you know, don't mince words. Tell me how you really feel. You know, that kind of thing.
You know, Kirk's bed is a giant race car, right? I mean, you know that.
See, that it's a pod racer.
Here we go.
Did you guys
go
hear that the Reliant here was originally designed with the nacelles on the top, but Harv Bennett approved it upside down, so that's why it looks the way it does.
is that true?
Yeah.
I read something, I was doing some research earlier today that said it was to differentiate the ship because it was originally written to be exactly, to look exactly the same as the Enterprise.
Yeah. Oh,
and okay. They needed to change, which, listen, that makes a lot of sense. If they did that in a Transformers movie, maybe I'd be able to tell them apart from each other when they...
Someone got out the Ertl model kit and put it together differently. So is this is this the first black Star Trek captain ever, right here?
Yeah,
I would think so. Yeah,
Yes.
As far as I know,
that's great.
I don't remember if they did that on the original series ever. I do know that for some reason Walter Koenig got the script sent to him ahead of time and gave some notes, such as like call it the neutral zone, not the neutrality zone. But like the note that he didn't give anybody or didn't mention to like anybody who'd like Nick Meyer was that he wasn't on the show.
Right.
When Ricardo Montalban was guest starring as Khan. And he said he knew that. This is in his like biography that he wrote. And he didn't want to lose this scene to George Takei, basically. Who he was
smart.
Certain it would have all gone to. And he says he does a better, he said you can't imagine George Takei doing that scream, like he wouldn't have been able to pull it off.
And you can just write around it and say that Chekhov was working below decks Khan was there.
Yeah.
We just never saw
him,
you know.
They never say Chekhov like joined the, like he come on board. He was just there.
He was just there, yeah.
Episode one. So he was always there. We just, you know.
Now here's, I love this line that the son, he says about that overgrown Boy Scout that you hung out with. And I love the B.B. Besh's delivery of here. I love the way she pats him on the chest a little like, you have no idea what you're talking about there. She just kind of,
things, but he was never a Boy Scout.
It's very hard for children to accept their parents had a sex life. So, sorry. Now, isn't this Mr. Kyle on board the Reliant from the original series?
Yeah, that's Mr. Kyle, yep.
Yeah. We didn't see him in that scene, but we did earlier.
Now, this looks great. I mean, all this stuff on City Alpha 5 just looks...
Spoilers.
This is
City Alpha 5!
Where they would actually see a little girl show up right here that was cut out of the movie. And they don't... And Chekhov's like, I see a girl. And Terrell's like, you're crazy. There's nobody here. This planet's deserted. But they cut that.
Hmm. It could be like Superman 2. Did you say a curl? That's like a cop.
So is that sand blowing? Is that an effect or is that really something happening?
That's probably really sand. Like, well, I don't know.
I think some of it looks like it's layered over. Because it doesn't look like it's hitting them.
Yeah, you're right.
But I mean, it's cool. They look like they're on the side of a van right now, like in the 1970s or something. It looks really cool.
I think these shots were always just the coolest. This is like the first time I felt like I saw like the idea of an apocalyptic planet.
Mm-hmm.
This is like the coolest moment to me as a kid when I saw this. And having watched Space Seed, I think probably right before I watched this, and just thinking this was what happened to them. This is so cool.
Go ahead, Chris. I'm sorry.
I was going to say they're reusing to keep the budget down. They're reusing the spacesuits from the first film.
Mm. Oh, look at that! You're totally right.
Oh, geez, I never realized that, Chris.
So you brought up a point, Corey, that ties into that. Made me think about this: is how many of us saw Space Seed before seeing this, or didn't? For myself, I'm pretty sure I've gone back and forth over the years, but I think I saw Space Seed after this. What about you guys?
I think I did see Space Seed first because I think I'd watched most of the episodes definitely by the time I saw the film, but even before I got the book and record set.
Right.
I'm sure I had seen it because I'd seen almost every original Star Trek before.
It was crafted in a beautiful way that you absolutely don't need to watch that episode to understand the thing that's happening in this movie. But it's so cool that it's a sequel.
The music in this moment is fantastic. Where Chekhov realizes Putney Bay.
Putney Bay.
That's marvelous.
Putney Bay.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
We've got to get out of here.
Yeah. It's great. The tension of it is so,
right,
you know.
The music's building and building and building here. It's like,
great.
He says right there, what about the tricorder?
Yeah.
What about the girl?
The little girl.
Little
girl, yeah.
This, talk about Kirk's entrance, this entrance of Khan.
This is badass.
Terrifying. Just seeing all these people in the sand. They look a little bit like Tusken Raiders, but they look amazing.
Oh, yeah. There's so much like going on with some Star Wars love in this movie, right down to the title of the film. Trying to like rip off of it, originally being called Revenge of Khan, right? Or Vengeance of Khan.
Yeah. Oh, was it called Vengeance of Khan? Oh, I didn't know that. Okay. I always thought it was Revenge of Khan or something.
It's still a year before Revenge of the Jedi would have come out, so they're ahead of it.
I do have
Those gloves.
Why are all of Khan's followers so young looking when they weren't on the original series? They look like they should be the children of
his. That's what I always thought they were.
I always thought they were.
But it's only been 15 years, so they couldn't be this old.
I've thought about this, and I've just had to let it go.
Well, maybe Khan was...
They age really well, all of them, except for Khan.
Except Khan.
Because he's really stressed out. His wife's
gone mad.
Well, when did they take him out of cryo freeze, too? You know, like, or when were they... Like, maybe he was already a guy in his 40s, and then his followers were all, like, 20. And so maybe that's what happened.
Yeah, well, in the original show, though, they looked like they were fairly contemporary to him. So,
that's, oh, okay, all right.
Yeah,
quit ruining my stories with facts.
Sorry, I'm sorry.
But you
never forget the face. But you.
But there is no reason for these spacesuits to have handles built in where they are, except for to have Khan grab it.
But that was already on the design, wasn't it?
Well, that's true. Yeah, you're right. It still makes no sense, though. Why would you put the handle there?
It's something he actually started improvising when they did this at some point, and it became part of it, you know, and they rigged it. Who knows? So, I'm just speculating.
So when I saw the film in the theater for the 35th anniversary, they had this great interview in the front hand, and Shatner tells the story about in this scene right here. Montalban was going nuts. He was yelling and screaming and everything. And the director says, hey, I need you to dial it back.
Yes.
If you start at 11, where do you have to go? And Montalban was like, oh my God, you're giving me direction. This is wonderful. No one ever gives me direction. So he was thrilled that the director was actually telling him what to do.
Yep.
And so, cause no one, I guess he was a legend by this point. So no one wanted to, but yeah, told him to dial it back.
Yeah. Nick Meyer said, don't show him your top because if that's it, they know you're not going any further.
Yep.
It's crazy, guys. There are some directors who just don't even talk to the actors. Like, that's not what they're concerned about. They're like, nah, the actors know what they're going to do. That's their professionals. I'm going to do my thing. They're going to do their thing. So, yeah, I'm sure it was a delight for Ricardo Montalban. I'm sure nobody told him what the hell to do ever in Fantasy Island.
Right.
Yeah, that was part of it. You know, he'd been on autopilot on that, I'm sure. And he even said he had to go back and watch Space Seed and several times to kind of get into the mindset of where Khan would be here in this film.
I love how offended he is at Admiral. I love that he's so pissed. And then when he says it himself, he pauses. You know, he says, never told you how. Admiral Kirk, you know,
right.
He leans on it. He's so mad. I love it. It's great.
None of this is really ever resolved, ever, is it? It's the fact that Kirk didn't ever check up on
responsibility to. He reported it to Starfleet.
Well, that's Starfleet didn't. I mean, it's like somebody did actually super mess up on that.
But I don't see it. Kirk's personal, like, it's not his job to go back, you know, he reports to Starfleet, he's off in other sectors, they should have sent, like, ships occasionally.
Well, we really wasn't Kirk's job to exile them in the first place to the planet when you think about it, right? It's like that wouldn't have been Starfleet approved. He just like made a choice and then he just let his like one of his like crew members leave with Khan and just go down to the planet. It's like to some hostile planet that is a better chance for him to survive in than going to prison. Wasn't it something like that?
Yeah,
it's just cowboy justice.
Yeah.
I was a prince with power over millions.
Now, this is really dumb of Chekhov to kind of like egg him on. Yeah. You know? like I would think you would be kind of like obsequious here. You'd be like, oh, sorry, Khan. I mean, Kirk was really busy. He's, you know what I mean? Instead, you're kind of like pissing him off when you're
Chekhov
like.
Chekhov needs a reminder as to why Khan is special in this. This is going to be his reminder.
Besides, if you go back and watch Space Seed, it's not Kirk and Khan in that fight scene anyway. It's really bad stunt doubles. So
the Hallmark ornament should have been more authentic and made it look like the stunt doubles. Oh, than,
here we go.
Right?
Gonna grab
there it is. There look at the fingers, the way he flexes the fingers, yeah, too.
Look at that. Good wire work, right? I can't see those wires.
Don't see them at all.
Yeah.
I'm not sure Montalban just didn't pick him up based on the fact that he's cut like crazy here in a minute when you see him. So
here we go. Okay.
That's really him. That's not prosthetic, guys. That's
Do you know why? So Shatner talked about this. He said Montalban got hurt in a horse riding accident, and therefore he couldn't use his legs as much. So he wanted to continue to exercise. So he exercised up top to compensate. He actually had it, like it hurt to walk and stuff for that for him in general at this point. Mm. So that's why he did a lot of that.
Man, I love these puppets. These puppets.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, this is what sold me. I mean, always as a kid on this movie. This is like nothing tops actual horror in Star Trek like this does. Nothing else.
They're so creepy. They're
my
so
wife still talks
upsetting.
About this stuff, and she's not a Star Trek person at all. So this how big are these puppets, I wonder? Are they what they appear to be, or are they much bigger to make it work on camera?
That's a good question.
By the way, I love this little detail here. I've always loved this. It's going to come up in a second with the puppet.
When he lets it go. On the table?
Oh. Yeah, and he goes, like he gets really mad. I love that the puppeteer did that extra little effort where he's pissed off that he took that thing out of his back or whatever. That's great.
I mean, so this is a genuine torture scene that we have happening. Yeah. As Khan is explaining to them what's about to happen when he puts this slug into their ear. And you're like, this is Star Trek? Is Chekhov about to get tortured? And that's exactly what's about to happen, which is why then you're sold at this moment that this is the coolest Star Trek film of all time.
And this guy is seriously sadistic and terrifying.
Yeah.
Here we go. Oh,
he's got nothing else going for him, you know.
They don't put it on them. They drop it in their helmet. That's what
they swirl the helmet around.
They got to anticipate it. Yeah, watch the guys. Yeah.
Right. It's so great. Talk about a great reuse of these costumes. They're just getting as much out of them as possible.
Yeah.
Speaking of reusing, Khan's amulet being the Starfleet thing looks great. Oh, how did they make it move on his face? How did they do that?
They said it was like fish in line. And like,
Bunch of 50-year-old men being squeamish.
Now, did those bugs crawl in the ear canal, or did they burr a hole? Because it looks like they burr a hole.
No, they crawl in the ear. They crawl in the ear.
All right. Okay.
Did you guys hear that when they took the giant model they had of Walter Koenig's ear, like, or so it was like 4 or 5 times the size. And they were goofing around one day, and somebody made a giant Q-tip and stuck it in there. And they just walked past it. There was a giant.
That is hilarious. here we go. We get some shit porn coming up here, boys.
See, unlike the first movie, this is done in just a couple of seconds, not an hour and a half.
And most of it's footage from the first movie.
This Kirk is just recycled. The ship. It's the same model that they made for the first movie.
Yeah, it's a lot of it's the same exact footage. I mean, they literally reuse the footage.
It was put through a process called editing. relatively unknown in 1979.
There's nothing wrong with 90 minutes of ship porn. I'm telling you, that's the best part of that movie.
But, you know, the Klingon ships that you see in the Kobayashi Maru, that they were Klingon ships that were actually in the film in the first movie, too. Mm-hmm. So there's There's a lot of reuse.
Yeah, this is the way you make movies. You work with what you got, and there was a lot to work with here. This is still longer than it needs to be.
No, it's not. So this is right, going to be a lot like us when someday we pass on the network to like the next generation of podcasters. We're going to come on board and you know, do an inspection and all that, right, guys?
You bet.
That's right. You guys, now, one thing about this movie that Gene Roddenberry had a problem with was how militarized it seemed. But I never got that. I felt like Gene Roddenberry forgot that Starfleet was military in between the mm-hmm. original series.
He fought against the military aspects, and the compromise was like, this scene got to stay in. There were some other things that got cut, I think, that were more military. This was the first time they just really appeared military, the costumes, the way that the crew is talking to everybody. But what Roddenberry had originally envisioned, what he showed in that 67 show, just didn't show this kind of official chain of command much on the 67 show. So,
but he had that line early on that says, I'll take that under advisement when this becomes a democracy, you know, in like the very first couple episodes. So I just, it was all there. I
mean, there was an episode called Court Martial, you know, so yeah. there's the menagerie. I mean, I always hear that argument, but I always felt like Starfleet was, you know, is a military / exploration division, you know, basically of the Federation.
Do you know that scene that just happened in Vulcan where they're speaking mm-hmm. in Vulcan to each other? They actually did it all in English when they recorded it, and then they went back in post and created language that fit into the mouth movements.
Oh, that is hysterical. Wow.
Great matte painting here, by the way. I like that. The engine.
Oh, that's nice.
Way back there. Look at that.
It's so cool.
So since we talked about uniforms, I'm just going to put it out there. These are the sharpest looking Star Trek uniforms of any iteration ever.
These are your favorite. You love the movie generation of uniforms. Yep. Like, yeah.
More than any Next Gen, Discovery, Enterprise, any of it. This is the
everybody
best.
Everybody looks great in them, too. I mean, no matter what shape they're in. And everybody's in pretty good shape in this film. They really are. But they still look good in it, even if they're putting on a little poundage here and there. They still look good.
So I got to talk about this music real quick. Sorry, I'm interrupting you, Chris. I apologize. But this music playing right now, this soundtrack is the best of any Star Trek soundtrack, guys. I listen to it all the time, especially when I'm flying. I get on an airplane for work. First thing I do is I throw in my earbuds because I don't want to talk to anybody. And I listen to this soundtrack. And this track right here is called Leaving Space Dock. And it is the best for listening when your plane's getting ready to take off the ground. Like, it's running along the runway, and this track, it's just amazing because it hits just right as you're taking off. It's beautiful.
James Horner, I really just, you know, I love this, the soundtrack to this and Star Trek III as well. And I just, it's wonderful. I listen to it as well, just on its own.
You know, I don't have three. I have 2, 4 in the 2009 movies. Three's good as well, huh?
Oh yeah.
Oh. Yeah,
he did do 3. I'm not crazy, right?
Okay.
4 for 3.
But all the music is great. You don't own all the music for every single movie.
Star Trek 4 is one of my favorite movies of all time. The soundtrack's a letdown. I'm sorry.
Oh, I can't.
I'm serious. I can't even with you. Dude, I thought it would be amazing. There are a couple tracks that are amazing.
I can't just. You're out. You're okay. Done. I'm kicking you out of this watch party. This is ridiculous.
This watch party is working really well, actually.
Here we go. Do you need to set it, crank equalizer? No. Now, Corey, as a producer, right? Like, this is a very dark bridge. Like, the bridge is really dark. Is that because of the budget? Like, they're just trying to maybe hide some things? Or do you think it's more of an aesthetic choice?
I mean, this is the darkest bridge I've ever seen. I would assume it's an aesthetic choice in this. Okay. I assume it's to highly separate it from the feel and look of the original TV show. I mean, if I remember this correctly, I think that guy waving.
Bye, everybody.
So funny. Have fun storming the castle. Funny.
He's actually really too big for that shot, that guy.
Yes, well, he's way in the foreground and the ship's far away. Anyway.
Okay.
But anyway, Corey, you think it's an aesthetic choice,
I think it's an aesthetic choice. This was supposed to be a made-for-TV movie originally. And
oh, my God.
They knew that it wasn't going to be made-for-TV when they started filming it, but like that was the original intention of it. Gosh, so I think they went out of their way to show that this was a theatrical release and why it was different from.
Can you imagine right after the slugs bore their way into Chekhov's brain is going to add for Rice-A-Roni? You know, like what a weird thing. That
Well, they are in San Francisco in parts of this movie. So
that's, there you go. Yeah. Now I rewatched 2, 3, and 4 all together recently because they are marvelous trilogy. And
I
love Robin Curtis as Savick. I think she's great. I think she gets a bad rap. And I think part of the reason is when I rewatch this movie is this Savick gets to be kind of the rule breaker. She's always kind of bending the rules, and it's the Savick in 3 and 4 is kind of the stiff. And that's not Robin Curtis's fault. But they kind of really do change her character because in the third film, she's very strict.
Robin Curtis plays it better than, like, traditionally than Christy Alley.
She plays it like a Vulcan would.
I agree. It's so weird. I had a crush on Robin Curtis. I remember going to a Star Trek convention when I was a kid and, like, buying a cocktail table napkin at an auction, at, like, one of those Star Trek auctions that she had kissed, like, the table napkin. And I paid like $20 for that, and I was really excited that I had it.
I gotta say, I in the past on different shows we talked about Star Trek, I have given Robin Curtis some crap for her "David is dead" delivery. But I gotta say, you know, watching this, I wasn't like as impressed with Kirstie Alley as I thought I was rewatching this recently. I liked her; she's fine, but I don't think she's. I think you're right. It's like they're like two different characters.
Yeah, I mean, I think Kirstie Alley's just perfectly great in the movie, but she's given a more fun character to play because she's the one who's always like, "Let me bend the rules and let me do this and let me get angry." And Savick in the 3 and 4 doesn't get to do any of that. They don't give her anything, so it's like no wonder people like this version better because she's kind of she's a more fun Vulcan, you know.
She's a like, fun the fun gal Savick, you know. Yeah, it's like she's Earth 2 Savick and
there's something about like Kirstie Alley having to deal with Spock's like Punfar on the Genesis planet that would have been weird.
Mm-hmm. Well, she gets more to do in this movie in general. She gets to play the Romulan part of her and show it, whereas you guys said the Robin Curtis didn't. And other than the Ponfar having sex, she doesn't actually. Robin Curtis doesn't get enough to do, and she doesn't do anything in 4 at all.
No, right? So, yeah, she's out of the movie really quickly.
They're just wrapping her up.
By the way, I'm totally the guy behind Khan there, staring at his screen, pretending to be working. That's totally me. Stare at the screen. Look, I can know what I'm doing.
That guy's playing Galaga. it does leave me. Since we're talking about guys in the background, that guy washing the floor at Starfleet Command was like on screen for so long for being a guy just vacuuming or scrubbing the floors. That was so weird.
And Shatner wasn't supposed to, like, look at him, and he did. And Nick tried to get him not to, and he did it anyway. So
this is a great bit where the elevator they're going to switch floors on us. It's a nice detail. You know, it's like you kind of forget
for the
about
audience.
It.
You assume that Shatner and Kirstie Alley are going to have some like romantic thing happen.
Thank
here.
God they did.
Thank God, that. Like right, thank right, God man. It does it.
Well, the bit about did she change her hair? I mean, I love that thing.
Yeah, he looks her over. He does the eye look on her.
I
up
love
and
this.
Down.
Wait here to open the thing. I love that. This is all one shot. You highlighting that they're moving the set around. It's a nice
the tunnel. Yeah.
That's great. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, they kind of shows that and it kind of makes you feel like the turbo lifts like go up, down, sideways.
There we go.
You know,
I love how mad he is.
He's always mad.
He's always mad.
I love DeForest Kelly and Bones. He's wonderful in every. There's never a bad Bones moment in any Star Trek. Period.
Unfortunately, guys, Bones like in modern terms, Bones was like a space racist. He just. Was like he would have been Me Too'd. I mean, he's saying
oh
he says
gosh.
So many inappropriate things about Spock all the time.
That's true. He so did say a lot of racist things about Spock. Like that.
Yeah, you green blooded inhuman. Yeah,
yeah, he's like wildly racist. Like,
I never thought of that till now. You've ruined the Bones for me.
By the way, one of the other things I love, and it's a minor detail in the screenplay, is I love that that Spock and McCoy. Know who Carol Marcus is. I love that. I love that when the name comes over when Uhura says the name, they cut to McCoy and he references it. And I love that because it's like that gives us like, oh, they've been all together all this time. They know each other to that point that, you know, they know Kirk's old girlfriend and they know that this is bad blood. And I love that they did that in as opposed to writing it like, Carl Marcus, who's that? Like, no, you know, McCoy knows who that is. I think that's great.
And it's interesting because, you know, it has to, like, his time with Carol and conceiving David has to come before the series because it's
basically, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yep, yep.
Ah, that sounds like the perfect time to introduce Captain Kirk on an episode of, like, Star Trek Strange New Worlds.
Yes, exactly.
We'll get that backstory.
I like this one scientist with the sleeveless shirt. Like he's showing his guns off.
Sun's out, guns out.
He really is the only one, isn't he? Everybody else totally has like what they all have different length sleeves. It's weird. Do you think that designates a rank in the medical community? Your sleeve length?
I thought after Star Trek One, they figured out that short sleeves don't work in space. Yeah. This mirror is incredible. I love this infinity mirror. Shot, it is really cool.
That's a great shot.
He's got the IDIC symbol on the whatever that is, the sequin thing from the.
Oh, yeah, the IDIC. Yeah.
The
infinite diversity of infinite combinations. Yeah.
You know, some fan made that, and Leonard Nimoy's like, hey, I got something we can hang on the wall.
You're probably right. Yeah. And this is, I think Spock wears the same outfit in Star Trek VI in a similar scene. Also directed by Nicholas Meyer.
This is marvelous. This
scene is that a red cat next to him? What is that? Looks like a cat.
It's like a sculpture. It's like his cat's.
It's like a stone or a gem, a giant
liar. You know,
but it's got a tail.
Yeah. maybe it's a cat. You're right.
Sillet. It's a sculpture of his pet Sillet or whatever.
Oh right, from the animated series.
It's canon. It's canon.
Right.
All canon. Sure. It's all canon.
His mom mentions it in Journey to Babel. And Bones goes, a teddy bear? You know, so.
I love this. Yeah. This scene between these two is just, oh my God. You know, for a sci-fi action film that they take the time to do this long scene with these two guys.
That's what's missing in the motion picture. These moments like this are just. I mean, you get a few things like they drafted me, you know, from Bones and that, but that's like it. Everybody else has like lost their personality in a transporter accident in that film.
Well, it scenes like this that inspired, I think, Chris, the movie we love, Beyond. There's scenes in Beyond that are like this that are just long, where it's just them being friends, and I think stuff like this inspired it.
This is clearly a case of like easy way to bring the budget down. This is an easy scene. This scene you can film in one day. You don't have to change locations. It's one setup. That set is super simple. Easy peasy.
So, and you probably got the actors completely happy about it because it's meaty stuff for them to dig into as opposed to staring at the view screen or something like
that. Yeah, that's a fun day of work.
Yeah.
You know, storytelling too, because they set up the conversation there between Spock and Kirk will repeat in the most pivotal moment in the movie toward the end too.
Yep.
So the power of this moment,
when
Kirk came storming onto the bridge just now, because now the action's happening, right? Like you had the touching scene and he's been given the go ahead. So the music, I don't know if you guys heard it, but the music was going da, 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 right as Kirk came on, he's taking control and all these kids now here it is. Yeah. He's telling everyone to grow up. And says, sorry, folks.
Look at that guy. It looks like he's about 9, that one.
Right. They're like, you know, oh, shit, I signed up for, you know, a little cruiser around the galaxy, not to go to battle. And they're, like, terrified. I mean, could you imagine?
They put them on the bridge for a tiny little mission, and then what? They were going to go on another ship, though? Like, what does that even mean?
Like, this would be like being in Kubert school, and suddenly you're handed pages of Shay the Changing Man to ink.
It would just be like that. Speaking of which, there is a connection. Yes, there is. One time, a bunch of us were in New York for a field trip, and we walked by Paul Winfield. He walked by us, and we all got so excited, like a bunch of nerds, because we were like, Captain Terrell, Captain Terrell, Captain. And I don't think he heard us, and we didn't chase him, but that was him, and we were just on cloud nine that we saw, and that's where we knew him from. Was this movie? He was just walking down the
just
street.
Standing there in that corner, perfectly still. That eel has complete control over him.
Yep. Mm. I by the way, I love the detail that a bunch of them are wearing Starfleet uniforms.
Yeah.
That's a great detail that they've...
Well, they're cold. Like, they've been without new clothes for 20 years, you know?
Like, was it the costume designer that said that he imagined that they took the upholstery from the cargo bay that they lived in and like, the chairs and things, and that's why their outfits kind of look like they're made out of, like, furniture.
They look like velour or whatever that's called. Yeah, you're right.
Corinthian leather.
Ah, finally an explanation for that. Leather. Thank you.
So if anybody wants to say Kirk, Spock was just talking to her, or any of you people that like to ship them before the Abrams movies, there they were talking. So, oh my God, they're in love. So there you go.
There it is.
So look at Savick's left leg. I miss those little things that curl down to hold your legs, like that seatbelt. I thought those were cool.
That was the big thing they introduced in the motion picture, mm-hmm. right? They have seatbelts now.
Yep.
Looks like she's playing a game of Simon there.
I mean, losing. Look at that. Yeah. That computer screen is silly.
What information is that screen giving her? What is it telling
her? She's able to read in Simon, you know? She can read those colors. They mean something to her.
And I just never noticed you could see the environmental jacket hanging outside when Bones walked in. So
really? That. Okay.
Yeah.
So why does he have wall decor that looks like a nacelle? Like, what is that about?
I don't know. That is, yeah. That's interesting. Retina scans. Oh, that was science fiction back in 1982. Yep.
Wasn't how I opened my iPhone. Yeah, I mean.
Oh, but I love this pause here. This is going to be great. Where Karl Marcus?
They call it a tape in the future, by the way. Security tape.
Oh yeah. Wow.
Okay, so the Project Genesis footage that we're about to see. Did you guys know that this is actually Pixar's very first?
No way.
That they created was the effects for this video. Which they get their money's worth from this.
Oh, you betcha.
They recycle it, you know, in the next two movies. So,
mm-hmm.
This is some early Pixar. Isn't that cool?
I had no idea it was Pixar. This is amazing.
I got a fun little thing that I did with the footage of the Genesis planet. When I was in college, we had a project where we had to use green screen or chroma key. So I used the Genesis footage, but I reversed it. And so I looked like I was flying. Like I laid down on a stool and in front of a green screen and I put myself in front of it. So it looked like I'm flying away from the planet.
Oh, wow. That's clever. Very clever.
Yeah. I didn't do the whole destruction part. I kind of started like right about here. Yeah. That's what I did. Yeah.
Well, everyone knew this footage, so I'm sure people recognized it, even Chris. But you guys are right. I mean, everyone knew this footage. Everyone remembered it because it was so astonishing for 1982.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, I blew me away. This is where it makes, like, you know, the original Star Trek looked so old now, mm-hmm. all of a sudden compared to these ridiculously cool effects.
It still looks good, actually.
Yeah, it does.
I think it holds up. I think it's great. I hope that one day we can revisit the Genesis planet.
So who plays Carol Marcus better? Her or was it Alice E. from
Abrams?
B.B. Beach was never asked to stand there in her underwear that they put in the trailers, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
I mean...
I love that Kirk's you know, love interest is age appropriate in this movie. Not that she's not in the other movie because Kirk's a lot younger, but I like that they cast an adult grown woman who is believable as a scientist in this movie. I think
Rob, because if they had cast like a girl in her 20s, it wouldn't have made much sense for Kirk to have had a baby with her like 20 years earlier.
True.
You guys hear that they were originally wanting to bring back the character from the Deadly Years, the scientist that
I remember reading that. Yes.
Yeah. And at one point, I don't know if the actress wasn't available, but yeah, so, you know, but they create, and some people think that Gary Mitchell makes a comment in Where No Man Has Gone Before that something about a cute little lab assistant that he introduced Kirk to, and some people think that that's Carol Marcus. Hmm. So
that would work. That would actually work.
She was supposed to be in Trek 6, and then that scene was cut when they had to cut the budget.
Hmm.
should have been in Generations or
yes.
Know. Well, any number, been, yeah. any or number of women should have been the one in Generations.
Or
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. To pick a random made up person, Antonio or whatever it was. Instead.
Edith Keeler. Yeah, it could have been yeah. anybody. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, the music. Dun, 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 dun. So good.
All right. Here's our Moby Dick.
Yep.
Yeah. And now, most people are aware of this, you know, from all the various commentaries and stuff over the years, but it's worth pointing out here, you know, Shatner and Montalban are never in the same room through the whole movie. They're two warriors that have battled over, you know, throughout this whole film, but you never see them in the same room in this movie. They're always talking over screens.
I think it took me about 1,000 views before I even realized that.
I didn't realize, I didn't realize until I heard it in an interview. I'm like, oh my God, what? Yeah, no, that must be wrong.
You don't
I mean, I've always known that just because people always talk about it. But when I originally saw it, I mean, yeah, I don't think it even occurred to me. You know, that like apparently like it was so hard to coordinate Montalban and Shatner's schedules that they never actually worked on the same days. So they're not, it's like Ricardo Montalban is giving this awesome performance opposite like the script supervisor.
Right, right, right. Yeah. By the way, there's the cast for the Real World City Alpha 5.
Look at how they're all set up in this shot. It is, it is a little ridiculous. Like
they're about to break into a song from Fame or something is what it looks like.
Yeah, it totally looks like. It's a very 1980s like
oh, da-da-da-da, da-da-da.
The worst production of Godspell I've ever seen.
There you go.
That's the joke. That's the joke I should have used 5 minutes ago.
That's what I was trying to come up with.
I love that now. I just love that Kirk gets himself out of these jams because he's a better Starfleet captain. You know, he doesn't do, I mean, look, I love Next Gen, but it's not like, oh, we talked to Geordi and got the bivalve exuders to reload. You know what I mean? Like it's
modulated the deflector sheet.
Yeah. It's just, he just outthinks Khan. Because of course he knows the ship better than Khan,
and his crew doesn't question him.
Yep.
Well, you're talking about the ending though, right? The prefix code stuff.
Yeah.
Or are you talking? Okay. Well, if we're going to address that, I have kind of an issue with that. I know it's not for like I don't know an hour now. Well, we'll come back to it. We'll come back to it because right now we're watching the Enterprise get blasted and little boys dying.
By the way, I love the detail where the Reliant says our coil emissions are overloading our transmission, and before Kirk can ask Spock to do it, Spock has already turned around and says their coil emissions are negative. I love that he's already looking that up before Kirk even asks him to do it. I think that's such a great that he's there on that wavelength. Like that's
probably like an actor thing. That's probably those two guys working that out. It's
I love that. I love that. That's Spock is that good of a.
What are they?
They're grabbing these masks. Watch it because Scotty's gonna have one on his face in a minute.
And all the guys that don't stay at their post. Right?
Look at those masks. Those always make me claustrophobic. It's like, where the hell is he getting air from? Oh, my God.
Yeah, no, it's like he's got saran wrap tightly put on his face.
Doohan passes out here. So, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, Chris. It's just those masks literally make me, like, I have a hard time breathing when I watch it.
You answered the question. I didn't put that was the mask because it looked like it was a thinner line. I didn't. Yeah, but that makes complete sense. I like the fact that Kirk realizes that, you know, he's even though he gets him out of this jam, he doesn't forgive himself for getting them into it because he like, I know better than this. What the hell, you know?
It was this such a cool shot that you could like see the torpedo like heading towards the ship.
Mm-hmm.
The anticipation, they're totally going to get hit. They know that they're fucked right now.
It's basically just, it's amazing that they're just basically two like pie pans flying at each other in the vacuum of space. It's all it really is, but it's so expertly directed. It's engaging and terrifying.
Like this guy's just sitting there.
I know.
Who is that actor that he is in? He's in Christmas Vacation. He's the neighbor. He's with Julia Louis. Yeah, that's him.
Oh my God. That guy's, poor
guy. We got to get him on Yellow Jackets right now.
Yeah, he was the voice of the Martian Manhunter in Batman Brave and the Bold, but I cannot think of that guy's actor's name to save my life right now.
I can't remember his character on Christmas Vacation either, but my wife quotes that all the time. She'd
Tom
be like,
Margo, I think.
That's it. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know, Todd.
Yeah.
Oh, here we go.
Yeah.
Boom. Holy, oh man, I really should have checked up on him. Oh.
He's like, look at those pectoral muscles. Who is that? Oh my God, it's Khan.
Yeah.
That view screen looks like two giant number two pencils, by the way.
It does.
TV budget.
Do you think that Kirk really would remember Khan? Did he make, considering all of the other grand adventures Kirk had in space, is this the person who left an impression on him? Not
oh,
like
come
space
on.
Link?
He had to.
Carl Montalban, man. How could you forget that guy, you know?
But I think he probably would remember him, but it may also be like a, seriously, this guy is giving me a problem? The guy I fought in the engineering room? This guy? It could be shock of that.
Why doesn't Kirk, this is where Kirk has an opportunity to say stuff like, Khan, I'm so sorry. I messed up. You're right, and I am wrong. Let's, like, work this out. But Kirk doesn't do anything like that.
That's a Picard move.
Yeah, it's Picard maneuver.
Kirk wouldn't do that.
Right. All right, so we're getting to the
Genesis
prefix.
Genesis, what's
that? Oh, yeah.
Genesis, what's that?
So we're getting to the prefix thing here. So, Rob, you mentioned you think it's great that Kirk outthinks him, but from a story-writing perspective, doesn't that kind of come out of the blue?
It does. Like, it is a deus ex machina kind of thing. It really is. But I don't care. You know,
because agreed.
It's cool. It's just cool.
And I mean,
it's
Star Trek. They dropped stuff like that on you all the time.
No, I love this. This is part of it too. The subterfuge. They keep nodding like I'm giving orders. Like he's got it all plotted out. I love that. I love that Savick is like, what? And he's like, don't question me. Just do it. Like, he's like, what are you doing? Come on.
He's like, you don't know me. You're not supposed to question me. That's for next generation.
Right. Exactly. So I was reading up online about the prefix codes, and there's like this whole thread about are they the weakest piece of Star Trek technology? Like, you can take over a ship with a 5-digit code. You can take over any ship in the fleet. And then these nerds break into this huge argument about how, like, it's got a biorhythmic reader, so it knows it's Kirk. God. You got to do it from the Enterprise. Like, they made all these millions of excuses. It's hysterical. Like, no, dude.
Look, Kirk has to put glasses on
now.
That's
great.
Right.
Yep. Damn.
Because
To look at Simon.
I love the way he says that. It's coming through now, Khan. Like, he's being very, very...
That's the best delivery.
Here we go, 160. Now, I will say, when I delivered my first ever freelance invoice to a client as an illustrator, I did not want to have the invoice be 00001. I wanted to seem like I'd been in business for a while, so I started it at 16309.
Oh, my God.
So funny.
That is amazing.
I was like, why not?
I totally get that. Yeah,
what difference does it make, you know?
I've never used... Yeah, I've always just chosen giant random numbers as invoice numbers. It just looks better.
Yeah, you don't want to ever give somebody, this is the first invoice I'm ever submitting to somebody. You don't want that. I love how much Kirk is just, I see your point. Like, he's just totally kissing his ass.
Montalban's got such flourish with each delivery.
Yeah, he really does.
So I can't believe that these guys did their lines not against each other even, you know, with like a script supervisor. They're so, it feels so much like they're acting with each other.
That's great. Here it comes.
Oh, here goes this guy's reaction. I love the in the second where he's going to see that the shields are going down.
But he's
this
like,
great.
He's like, I can't.
I love Justin this. Scott. That look right there.
Yeah.
What? Boy, he gave up.
I can't. It's when he like slams his fist down. Yeah. I just did it on my desk.
Yeah.
You know that guy didn't like get an end credit in the end of the movie because
right.
No, that was Justin Scott. What are you talking about?
But he doesn't get a credit in this movie.
He doesn't.
Serious? Really?
Yeah.
Because he messed up his own negotiations.
Yep.
He tried to get in the opening credits and they wouldn't give it to him. And then he like signed something that he thought meant he would just be in the end credits, but they just took him off entirely then.
Oh my God. He's the unsung hero of 70s and 80s supporting characters. That's crazy.
Yeah.
And he's in Next Gen too. He comes back for Next Gen.
That's why Shag, he wanted his name in the opening credits. He was like, he's great on that Next Gen episode, by the way, him and David's Next Gen episode.
Mm-hmm.
Who remembers Phoenix? Scott's TV series. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember that.
I love that show. For all, like, what, 6 episodes or whatever it was. Yeah,
it's like that and the something of Matthew Starr around the same.
Powers of Matthew Starr with Louis Gossett Jr.
Yep.
Now here, this scene makes no sense whatsoever.
Not in this version.
He stayed at his post.
Take him to sick bay. What are you doing?
What's your problem? It's like Scotty's just being dramatic. Yeah. He's just like, I'm going to walk this dead body up to the bridge so they could all see how what should they see?
What it caused.
They only had the budget for one person to get like a thermal silver blanket and the rest had just.
What do those numbers mean in the background? 34, 35, 40, 41.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe that's never the noticed patient those before. Number?
Maybe.
He isn't dead yet. Why did Scotty really messed up? Maybe if you brought him right to sick bay,
yeah,
he could have done something.
Scotty killed his own nephew. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
He stayed at his post.
I thought the rest of them didn't abandon their post, though. They're like frantically trying to do their work.
He kind of is being a little dramatic, Scotty, but he's an exaggerator. Scotty. That's what he does.
Right.
Yeah. He was supposed to have a little bit of a flirtatious relationship with Savick in one version of the script that got cut, too. So his character really got cut down here.
Wow. Yeah. Jeez.
In this film. Yeah.
Oh, well. Scotty's great in this movie, though. He's got lots of great stuff. And then we didn't even mention the bloody handprint that Kirk gets in that moment, yeah, that scene, yeah, on his uniform. It's a great touch.
Speaking of people getting stuff cut down, I mean, leading up to this film, Sulu was supposed to be captain of a ship.
Right.
And he was coming back as a favor to Kirk for this training cruise. And the story goes that for whatever reason, even T'Kai didn't want to do it. And so they made sure that scene never got filmed. But that's where that whole idea of Sulu being on the command track comes from, is the early scripts for this movie was. And so that's why he eventually ends up the captain in the sixth movie.
Yeah. Did you guys see the little red light things that were in Regular One that just like they're like poles that are going across with like light going across? Mm-hmm. Apparently they reuse those on The Next Generation, and Shatner even takes them with him to Airplane 2, apparently, which I haven't seen.
Get out of here!
Yeah, they're in Airplane 2, so yeah, but I haven't seen that movie in like 25, 30 years. But
didn't that come out the same year as this? I think Airplane 2 was 82, so yeah.
I think so. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
barely, sir.
This movie came out like right after Superman 2. I think.
What a summer. Oh my God.
It's like the summer of 89 that was packed full of great movies.
I love she makes up this regulation. There's no such regulation. All right. Okay.
He's just like, I like her because she looks like Spock, but she just acts like not Spock.
the word you're looking for is she's got moxie. She's got moxie.
Yeah, it was. That's the word I was looking for, moxie.
I love that Bones was like, we will, you know, back mm-hmm. to Spock.
That's again, a great shot. The model backlit like mm-hmm. that? That looks super. Mm-hmm. That's fantastic.
This transporter effect, how gorgeous is that compared to the old one? I mean, just beautiful.
Yeah.
So cool. This is where their awesome, like, coats are introduced.
pop that collar, baby.
This
pop
is their Hoth gear.
Yep. Like, right?
I mean, that collar is, like, popped.
I mean, Bones is down.
And so everybody else is down. He, like, right before they transported down, Kirk just popped it up. He was like, transport. Engage.
That was
now.
Shatner, too. Popped. You know
oh,
Shatner.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He's like, have you seen what the kids do with their iZods? Check this out.
With their iZods. Get out of here.
This is all well staged, too. This is very. This is like a horror sequence.
It's going to get a lot scarier. Yeah.
Really well done.
Right through here.
This reminds me of Luke walking through Bespin, to be honest with you, with all the doors opening and, mm-hmm. you know, it's got that.
Not knowing
it's
what's
creepy.
Around the corner.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's creepy.
Probably some inspiration. What? I mean, when the bodies are going to fall on this, I just never seen anything like that on the original Star Trek show. It was just.
How did the rat get aboard?
Where did the rat come from onto this planet? They just had rats were created during the Genesis effect?
No, it implies wherever man goes, we bring our crap with us. You know, they
stowed aboard, and then here we go. We're about to turn it. Anytime your back is facing something,
the monitor with Silent Uhura added a lot to it. Oh, God, the piano strings in that moment too are great. So loud.
That's good. Look at that.
Like, and look how many people
they took just down. Lower the body sound. Oh,
look at the what was that pile of blood on the floor.
No, just how many people they like look at just oh. Mm.
This couldn't have happened too long ago, Jim. No, you're like the cool doctor. You know exactly how long ago that happened. Just come on.
Or he's got something in his pocket that scans it and will tell you that.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Get the little cigarette lighter thing.
All those blinking lights.
I love this. Yeah. I love that. This is such a Kirk moment. He's trying to figure out the code. Open it. Doesn't work. I don't know. All right. How about this? All right. I'll just punch it. I love it. I love that they jump. That's great.
That is horrifying.
All right. So this is a horrifying moment. So these freaking slugs killed like the rest of the crew of the Botany Bay. But for some reason, it's just going to crawl out of Chekhov's ear right now. And he's going to be okay.
I never thought about that. You're right. Why does Chekhov survive? What is it about him fighting it, I guess?
Maybe they weren't in there long enough. Maybe it killed...
That to the minute. I've something occurred to me that had never before when we get to that moment, I'll mention it. But, I do like that, you know, they don't question, especially because it's Chekhov and they're glad to see him and he's not dead. They don't question, well, why are these two guys still alive? Why wouldn't they have killed them too like they did everybody else? But they're alive so they can, you know, they're working for Khan still.
They don't seem to wonder why they're acting a little like odd. Zombies.
Just staring off into the middle distance.
You look at Chekhov, man. He's just staring.
He really is. He's not breaking. Kirstie Alley looks like she's kind of like, who should I listen to right now?
Yeah.
I love he says he slit their throats. That's pretty pretty graphic for a
Star Trek. He says it too, the delivery is just so stilted.
For a Star Trek project, that's pretty... I love that he blames you for the devil. I know what he blames me for. I love that.
I know what he blames me for.
Yeah, I like that.
Originally, she was going to be in the film. You know, Khan's wife, the Enterprise trader.
Oh, right. Right.
That would have been just fantastic if that... But, you know, his motivation for his character makes so much sense because she's gone.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like it would be less justifiable for him if she was still there.
Yeah, Marla MacGyvers,
That transporter pad looks kind of reminiscent of the old series a little bit.
Yeah, it does.
They only could afford like one color for that pad. It was like, they only had red lights for this panel. It really looks like a Christmas tree is lit up next to him.
It does! I keep waiting for it to form a shape like a light bright.
It is like pretty silly when you look at that. Like, what is that supposed to be doing?
It's like a hard drive. Each one of those is a hard drive light. They're all blinking. They're all in use.
Either now the code has been put in. Hours will seem like days. You know, it's pretty subtle. You know what I mean? Like, unless you really know to look for it, it's pretty good. You just kind of blows by you that you're like, oh, he's giving him a code because they know Khan is listening.
As a kid, I thought that was brilliant. As an adult, I think it's brilliant.
Yeah.
Agreed. It's brilliant.
Yeah. And it's the type of things that, you know, that, I mean, it's a callback to something you would see them do in the original series, you know, that connection they have, they think on the same wavelength.
Yep.
So.
Yep. And Kirk says, understood. Like he, you know, he's like, okay, I'm getting what you're laying down here, Spock. Fantastic.
And that's why I like that better than the prefix code. Because the prefix code comes out of nowhere. That, when it pays off in 30 minutes, it's like, oh my God, it was there the whole time. Why didn't I see it?
Yeah, yep.
I love this line. Where are we going?
Where they went.
Suppose they went nowhere.
DeForest Kelly's... Go ahead, Chris. I'm sorry.
I just read Kirk's line. It's fine. I just love Shatner's delivery of it, too. They have such a great rapport, too. So yeah.
Why can't the transporter effect be as cool there as it was when they were beaming in?
It's a different pad. And that one wasn't bad. I mean, I'll still take that over the Next Generation effects. It looks great.
There it is. Yeah. There they are all.
Really, the transporter can't detect the slug eels in their ears? I feel like the transporter would be able to detect that. Just saying.
Maybe if somebody was like at the controls monitoring it, maybe they would have.
Yeah, right. Yeah, there you go. Right.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you for the explanation.
Yeah, yeah. Good retcon, Chris. No, good retcon.
Just be thankful it didn't go all Brundlefly and mix with their DNA in the transport.
Oh, God.
Oh, father versus son.
Yeah.
Perm versus perm.
Daddy wasn't around to teach him how to Kirk Fu, though.
Right. Here, I feel like he's going to hit him one more time.
Classic Kirk punches, though. Like, it's great.
Yeah.
How does the young Dr. Marcus not know who Kirk is, though? Because isn't in Star Trek parlance, isn't he like MacArthur or Patton? Like, you know what he looks like. Even if you've never met him, you know what he looks like.
If you're part of Starfleet, I mean, like, I can't name other than a few, you know, handful of people. I can't name famous generals, you know, in the military today.
I get. Yeah, but there's nobody that famous.
He's not in the military, Rob. He's just some doctor who doesn't follow the military.
Yeah.
All right. Fair enough.
He despises the military, actually.
Yeah. And I kind of get the impression he did know, but he just thought Starfleet was bad. So they were coming to take his.
No, that's true. All right.
I love how jury-rigged that looks.
Yeah. And it's the comms from the first, from the motion picture, the wrist comms.
Seriously?
Oh. Yeah.
Is that the first time we saw someone get disintegrated by the Starfleet blasters?
Phaser?
Yeah. Oh,
maybe.
How easy is it to commit murder in the Star Trek world when there's no body, right? You could just disintegrate it and be like, I don't know. I don't know where he went.
You must leave a trace of particles or something behind for DNA.
This would have been better. I just now realized this. It'd been better if Chekhov had resisted and shot Terrell from killing Kirk, kept him from killing Kirk.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
that would be great. And then if Chekhov could be haunted by that, it would actually have added some pathos to his character.
Right.
Oh, I just no-prized this. You ready? So, right. So Terrell's, you know, in pain. Right. He dies. So both of those earwigs came from the same like litter. So maybe the death of one of them caused the other one. Like maybe there's a symbiotic link.
Okay.
Why else would Chekhov start screaming like that?
The other one just starts going nuts. Yeah.
It must be a symbiotic link. So once one died, that's why the other one comes out.
Now this, I gotta say, this is a super duper nitpick. But okay, now look. Here's the sequence of shots. Here's the thing.
Terrifying.
This is disgusting. It's crawling out of his ear.
Holds up great. This is great.
Look, it falls out, and it's about right? Like, isn't that right by Chekhov's head that he just fired?
Yeah.
Kirk's a really good shot.
For sure. And for some reason, the phaser doesn't disintegrate this. It catches it on fire.
Oh, good point. Yeah.
Done, and you know, it killed something that size. Maybe I don't know.
Oh, here we go.
It had like four little lights. Oh, this is the moment.
Here we go, everybody.
You hear me?
Look at the face. Now it's like multiple. Give me 11.
Yeah. He's so forlorn. Like, I can't believe you're not dead yet.
Still,
old friend. But he's
managed to kill just about everyone else. But like a poor marksman, you keep missing the target.
This is exactly what I said this was going to be. A bunch of old men quoting this movie.
come on. Shatner really gives an amazing delivery. It makes no sense. And then fucking Ricardo Montalban just gives it back. Like, and they give it to, they're both giving it to a script supervisor. This is so cool.
Well, I love the echo. And I assume this isn't Maltimore doing it. Like the echo, they were like, buried alive, buried alive.
This is like these are the quotable moments coming up right now. We have to quote it.
Kirk is acting, though. You got to remember, he is actually acting.
Oh, you're right.
The character of Kirk is acting. And Kirk, when he acts, he goes overboard even more than Shatner. So.
Think of the implications of that statement.
Well, I mean, Kirk is genuinely pissed off, he is pissed at devices, but he's acting about him being trapped. But the scream, that's the acting.
Exactly, yeah.
Marooned for all eternity in the center of a dead planet.
There it is again.
Here it comes. There.
Yes, it's so loud you can hear it in space.
A thousand memes were born.
A thousand memes.
You can hear Shatner scream.
I mean, When Jason Alexander mocks it on Seinfeld, I just thought that was just for me when I was a kid. You know?
did Khan just have a little bit of an orgasm when Kirk screamed at him? Because he looked like, I couldn't tell, it looked like relief, like, oh yeah, I got what I wanted.
Yeah, he absolutely did. He had like a little endorphin rush and he was feeling it.
And he said, I've hurt you and I wish to go on hurting you. You know, just like,
yeah, it's very sexual. Like, it's really well done because they both play it the same way. Like, it's very impressive that they're not actually together and they are on the same page like that.
I wonder if one of them, like the second one, got to see the rushes of the first one to go, oh, that's what we're playing at. Okay. I wonder if they
could only assume it would have been Shatner who would have been the one with that privilege, but who knows?
I thought
apparently
I read
they
that
they did go to lunch together and talk while the film was being made. So, you know, even though their schedules didn't line up. So I guess they could have discussed what they were going to do with each other. But
I thought that I had read that most of Montalban's stuff was shot first.
Maybe.
Like they had him for a certain period of time.
Maybe he's responsible for making the performance so good. So they have unlimited food here that they could eat forever in the Genesis cave. But really, what is that? Just apples?
Pretty much, yeah.
Like, wouldn't they actually die from malnutrition, from not really having any protein?
there's animals. There are animals.
There are animals. There are rats in the Genesis cave.
No, there are animals. You're going to see, there's like a thing flying.
I can't wait to get into the Genesis cave. We're almost there.
You're gonna see something fly. So I assume that there are, you know, cows and that type of.
I don't understand. The Genesis effect creates cows and birds. I thought it just created like plant life.
Lifelessness. I'm gonna feel really stupid if I don't see it, but I'm 99% sure that during one of the big shots coming up. In a moment, you're going to see like a thing flapping, like a bird.
If you're going to feel really stupid, how's that going to feel different from normal? Nah.
I mean, does the Genesis effect turn?
You're still here? I kicked you out after the Star Trek 4 music.
So the eating the apple scene is like famous, right? Because it's, I was reading up on like eating food in a scene is a way of showing you just don't give a crap anymore. It's like you're just showing disrespect of the whole thing by eating food in a scene. There's interesting articles about it, and
what every character like does when they're interrogated on Law and Order by the police. They're like too busy to talk to them because they have to be eating.
Exactly, it shows a disregard for the situation. So it's showing that Kirk's not worried about this situation. And then, of course, it's repeated in the Kobayashi Maru and the J.J. Abrams Star Trek. He's eating an apple during that too. Which is interesting because they're talking about the Kobayashi Maru while he's eating the apple in this one, and he's actually eating an apple in the Kobayashi Maru in the other one.
Well, they bring it back again for one more round of apple eating in Star Trek Lower Decks right now. There is an episode called Kobayashi Maru.
Nice.
Oh, no, it's not Lower Decks. It's actually on – no, it was on Lower Decks, and it was on – they've done Kobayashi Maru on Lower Decks and now on Prodigy also.
Oh, okay. Nice.
Okay. These two, Prodigy is great, guys. Watch it.
These two have a believable chemistry. I believe these two as a couple.
Their chemistry really he doesn't look at her at all when they're talking.
Believe them as a former couple or believe they're still feeling?
I believe that they had a relationship.
Yes.
I think that's hard to sell. That these are two people that probably never met before in real life. And you have to pretend that they had a long burn. They have a child together. That's a lot of history. And I think a lot of it is B.B. Besh. I love when she says, you know, tell me what you're feeling. Because he's kind of closed off because he's in Kirk mode. He's in Captain mode. Look, he's not even telling McCoy what the plan is. You know, like for this, I love this. This is a very Adam and Eve kind of thing. Walking into.
That's true.
Just the light coming up.
Does she have the belt thing on from Star Trek 1? The little belt life monitor thing they had on their Star Trek 1 uniforms. Looks like she's wearing one.
No,
there we go.
I swear to God, I think you see shots. You see like
I don't
something.
See any nope. fur.
I didn't see anything there.
Rob's got to feel stupid.
Painting me.
Think you said you're going to feel stupid, Rob? Isn't that what you said?
Yeah, I swear to God, I thought I saw.
The life forms grew later at a substantially accelerated rate.
There you go. Life forms.
That's not
life
foliage.
Forms.
Life forms.
Tiny little life forms.
Yeah.
Bad movie. Good quotes.
All right. Is there a bird that's going to fly through?
Nah, I guess I'm not. Nah.
But it looks like Paradise Island.
That was one of the best Yes albums ever, that cover. I think it was a double album that they did in 1974.
So do you guys think in that scene, that this is Kirk a deadbeat dad? Or did he do...
Absolutely. Okay.
Well, he does say, I did what you wanted. I stayed away.
That's what deadbeat dads do. Mm-hmm. It's like the easy it's the easy way out. You gave me an out. I took it. Done. I mean, yeah, he's a deadbeat.
If they don't use money in the 23rd century, maybe he wasn't responsible for child support, at least. So,
you know. Oh, my gosh. Chris has really gone down a path on this.
Yeah, this is getting dark. Yeah, all right. Here we go. I love the finger pointing that guy right there.
Yeah.
I love this.
I'm pretty sure Kirk's DNA is also on file with like Starfleet for David to have known.
There's a lot of reason his DNA is on file. Probably there's a lot. of paternity tests. Yeah,
like he left his DNA all over the galaxy. So yeah, it's.
I like that Davidson once said he cheated. You know, he's the one that says he calls out that he's.
There you go.
Here's our reveal.
I don't believe in a no-win scenario. Boop, that's a fantastic line.
Yeah.
Are you ready? I love that McCoy's not even surprised. He's like, yeah, of course. I should have known. It's great. This is such, oh my God. They're the dramatic crunch.
The apple. There it is. The apple's all about that.
I love the apple. I want an apple right now.
Now, another moment. I love this where Spock says, you know, Dr. Marcus. Well, hello. Of course, Mr. Spock. I love that they know each other. Mm-hmm. They've met at some point. It costs you nothing. And it's a detail in the screenplay that gives it to me an extended life that these two have met at some point. You never saw it, but they know each other. I love those. I love that detail where she says, hello,
amazing. She's happy to see him again. As they were throwing their coats off as they came on, he like threw his coat to Carol Marcus. He just like threw it off.
Really?
He like just gave it to her to hold. And she like walks off the transporter pad holding his coat, but there were like lieutenants who came up to take the other people's coats off.
People were helping Savick put hers on. Yeah,
I would imagine Spock would know who Carol Marcus was, even if she wasn't connected to Kirk, just because Spock always knew every brilliant scientist that was connected to the Federation.
That's true.
True, because he's Spock, you know. But that's great that they established that. Now everything's red because it's we're on red alert, and I think wonderful.
Time for some ass kicking.
Yep.
You get the different color, green and red, on the screen of which ship is which, with the names and everything.
Really easy for you to understand.
I love Scotty's always, you know, don't do this or can't get that, and Kirk says like, no promises, on your way. Like it's just like takes absolutely no. Yeah.
And you warp speed in 2 minutes, or we're all dead.
Yeah, whatever, Scotty. Just do it.
After Relics, you got to wonder: is Scotty multiplying the the problem by 10 or whatever?
Right.
Constantly. I've used that advice from Relics my entire career.
How much is this going to cost, Corey? $80 million. Okay, really?
Exactly. And look, I did it for $600,000. I'm a genius.
Is there a guy with an ice cream maker running past in any of these scenes? I don't think so. So too bad. No Cloud City. So.
Oh gosh. This getting like ready for war is just so different for Star Trek. You know, you don't see the crew members running around getting ready for battle. Normally, it's all
loading like a torpedo and pulling those plates off of the floor, which seems like an not like something that they should have to do to load
in the 23rd century. No,
well, it's an exploration ship, though. Go ahead, Chris. Sorry,
but no, they said that they knew that it should be automated, but they wanted that Nick Meyer wanted to add to that, you know, that nautical feel of this is like a submarine battle.
Mm. Sure.
Well, I mean, he nails that. It's for sure.
Yeah.
Those are all of those moments are the ones that Chris, you were talking about where Roddenberry was having the problem with the militarization of the.
Yeah. I think Roddenberry, just his idea of what Star Trek was changed between the actual show and the motion picture. And that's why The Next Generation was the way it was, because he was completely in control of that when it first started, and everybody was very kumbaya. You know, there was no conflict between any characters, and it was a very humanistic approach, non-militaristic approach. And that his vision had just changed. And
absolutely, yeah, because you can't deny he set up the whole Kirk, I'm sorry, Spock and McCoy riff. I mean, there's your conflict right there. How can you deny right. there's conflict in the 23rd century when you put it in there?
Right. A lot of that was Gene Kuhn too. He's kind of the unsung, you know,
yeah.
of Star Trek. That was the writer producer of a good chunk of the first and second seasons. The really great era of
creator of the Klingons. Yeah, I mean,
And the submarine stuff. I mean, you really got the good example of that. I forgot the name of it. It's not Aaron of Mercy. Is it the Romulan?
Balance of Terror.
Yeah, Balance of Terror. That whole thing's yep. a submarine battle.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And similar that Kirk, you know, Kirk and the Romulan commander, played by Mark Leonard, never you know, interact beyond the
view. Here we go. Wait a minute. I got to say now, hold on. If here the line coming up.
Is this the chase here on the Antares Nebula one?
This is our another great reveal there. Here we go. Yeah. This is Khan. I'm laughing at the superior intellect. That's what we say to Siskoid to get him mad. We say that to him.
No, sir. I mean, you know.
Look out, Justin Scott.
Yeah, he's.
All power, damn you.
Yeah.
This is like he's losing his composure. It's so great. Like. This is like classic, you know, hero and villain stuff that was incorporated into this. And
definitely.
And that's exactly earlier where he said, don't go to 11 early so you can do it later. And he just did.
And he did. And no, it's a great note, particularly relevant for this movie. Khan needs to have that arc.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to see him in weird and dire circumstances keep his cool. So when we see him lose his cool at the end, it's really threatening. It's like scary to see him lose his cool.
I'm terrified of the man.
And then he turns into Freddy Krueger by the end. So
yeah. Whoever came up with the idea of them fighting in the nebula, I mean, where, you know, where they're basically all their technology doesn't mean squat is, you know, that was brilliant because it, you know, they're literally flying blind. They can't use their sensors.
The shields don't work. Yeah.
Right. They just have to come up on each other and, you know,
it like makes it a battle of wits instead of who's got a better starship or who's got more weapons. It becomes a battle of wits.
So here's a question. Do we actually know, like, if you were to go into Nebula, this kind of stuff wouldn't work? Or did it all come from this movie? And it's just established and we all just accept if you go into Nebula, it wipes out all your ship's abilities.
I don't know, man. Have we flown a starship into a nebula yet to see what happens?
All right, smart ass. I'm just saying, I think it started here.
Yeah, well, you know, whenever they go through, like, great barriers and stuff, people get ESP powers or you find a great god or something. So in the nebula, your shields don't work and, you know, things like
that. I love the Great Barrier. I'm excited for more Great Barrier in the future and seeing what God is up to.
But why does he need a starship?
Exactly.
Maybe we can cover that one, Rob, at some point. Because I just love it. For special reasons. He's climbing a mountain. Why is he climbing a mountain?
Oh, my gosh. That video is insane. That meme or whatever you want to call it.
That's a great shot. I love the lights.
Yeah. Beautiful.
It's marvelous.
Looks a lot like it's going into the Great Barrier right here.
What is David with his preppy sweater look that he's got going? What is that about?
Did everyone think they were taking a static shot? Because nobody moved for like 5 seconds on the bridge. They all just sat there like, smile.
Yeah, it might have been a production shot or something.
Yeah. There we go. Oh, there it is.
Yep.
The part where the two ships get so close that they just look like they're going to scrape each other. Oh, so good. That hadn't happened yet, but we're getting there.
We like never saw this in Star Trek where the ship just takes a pounding like this, you know? It was so cool. Like
that guy gets set on fire.
Mm-hmm. Dude.
Direct hit there. Yeah. Why wouldn't you always just aim for the
these
cockpit?
These assholes weren't wearing their seatbelts. Like
Khan super strength.
There it is.
Yeah.
You make a good point. Why make your bridge exposed?
Yeah, why would you not just shoot for that all the time? Mm-hmm. Just always shoot for that. Just take out the captain. He's sitting right there. We can see him.
My idea would be that you don't know where the bridge is, but on these two ships, they would know where the bridge is.
That's true. That's right. Yours is
superior. This is like great acting right here, I think. I love it.
He's got to kiss Khan's ass till the very end.
Poor Justin Scott.
I like how Khan just... I will avenge you.
Well, I've heard some people say they thought Justin Scott's character was his son. Like, is there anything to back that up?
I mean, it's possible if it was his son before they went into cryogenic freeze.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it could have been, yeah.
I like this, that everybody kind of looks at Chekhov a little funny.
Yeah.
Because they know just what happened there. They're all like, you all right? They're all just kind of, Uhura gives him a look, kind of like,
he doesn't act like he's 100% all right.
No, he doesn't. Yeah.
This would be like Star Trek 4, where Bones is like, are you sure it's a good idea having him back at the station like nothing happened?
That movie. I love that movie so much.
Chekhov screams a lot, yeah. Well, you're going to cover Star Trek 4 then, Rob.
That movie makes me so happy every time I watch it. Like, this movie's just so perfect.
It doesn't get better than Whales and Catherine Hicks. Yeah.
It does not.
It's the best feel-good movie of all time. I mean, there's no enemy in the movie. It's glorious.
Double damn right on you.
There you go. Z-axis. Didn't he just say the Z-axis line?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love the three-dimensional thinking, too. If you want to be hardcore Star Trek nerd, it goes back to the three-dimensional chess. You know,
they show them
playing, you know, so that's a nice little bit.
Oh, the way that came out of the nebula just then with the lights first, so cool.
ILM rocked the crap out of this movie, man. It still looks great.
These effects hold up. Yeah. This whole movie, everything looks great, except for the stuff that just doesn't kind of make sense that you would do in the future, like using Christmas lights to guide your ship. But like, other than that?
This remastered version, they didn't change anything, right? They just cleaned it up. As I understand it, right?
It's just cleaned up.
Probably. Yeah. What is the status of the screen?
That is amazing. That's like, hey, yeah. MF, I'm on your rear. You got it. I got a joystick now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what Riker tried to do in that horrible movie when he had the joystick, but now you'll never be Chekhov with the joystick, buddy.
Here we go.
And the Enterprise just needed to get the high ground here.
Boom. That looks great.
Such a catharsis. Oh. You know, you feel naughty, but feel so good to watch this crap blow up.
Yep.
I watched this movie over and over and over again. I would watch it like 5 times in a day.
Mm-hmm. I love how crap just drops out of the ceiling.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's great. Like, I love that.
All that stuff hanging from the ceiling?
I love that. Like, it's like a severed limb, you know?
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah, that's good. That's probably exactly what they're trying to go for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Prepare to be boarded.
Yeah, that's great.
Didn't even say to Khan, Commander of the Reliant.
Yeah.
Oh, here we go.
Yeah. Whoever said Freddy Krueger was dead on. Here you go.
Yeah.
Two-Face!
Yeah.
There he is.
Welcome to prime time, Kirk.
Yeah. His hand's even jacked up. Yeah. So, yeah, it's all fused together. It's like, ugh, yeah. And he's not the hand he had the glove on either. So.
God, what could have happened here if Khan turned himself in instead of, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that never would happen.
Suicide diving.
Yeah.
It is kind of amazing you can turn on the Genesis torpedo with just these couple of buttons. Like,
and one gloved hand.
Yeah.
And the twisting cylinder makes no sense, but it's such an effective storytelling device. It's such a great countdown. You're like, oh God, here it goes. I don't know what it does, but it looks bad.
I mean, good Lord, I signed up for Tumblr last week and it took me longer than this takes Khan to set off the Genesis torpedo.
It's actually true.
All the different cylinders go in. Yeah,
visually it looks great.
He doesn't have to actually put any passwords in. He's just pushing the stuff in.
As we've established, there's no real security in computers in the 23rd century.
No.
5-digit PIN number to take over a ship.
They were supposed to, like the child you were talking about, Corey, the child was supposed to be standing there on the transporter pad with the
Genesis
device.
That was what?
Oh, really?
The kid's last scene is looking at the Genesis device right before it explodes.
Yeah.
That is messed up.
That's one of the reasons the kid got cut, because it was just
too dark.
Well, and it was like, what was the point of this kid? This is the arc of this kid. We don't learn anything about him, and now we're going to watch him die.
Wow. Yeah.
That is messed up. They made the right call. They made the right call pulling that.
Yeah.
So why is the fire extinguisher so prominent on the bridge of the Enterprise in the 23rd century? I mean, those look like standard.
What happened in this movie, Shag? Come on.
That is really funny. I've never noticed that before.
Oh, really? Every time I watch it,
Spock is going to. Oh, all right. I know what I got to do.
He doesn't hesitate, and it goes back to that talk that Bones gave him in Breads and Circuses, where he says, "You're more afraid to live than you are to die, because you're afraid you'll slip up and let your feelings show and let your emotions out." And I can't ever since I put those two things together. Yeah, that's why Spock was like, "Oh, yep, I'm going to go do it." You know, that's part of my headcanon for Spock.
I feel like I can recontextualize this now. I think what's really happening in this moment is he just really misses Michael Burnham. And he is, it's going on a suicide run right now because he can't take it anymore. The loss of Michael Burnham.
Could be. So how much do you think they had laid out when they did this remember thing?
Well, this was not that, this scene. Well, not this, but the remember, that's not shot by Meyer. I think that this was later. This was added later.
This was shot by the computer security cameras because they're able to rewatch this footage in right. part
That's
three.
True. Right. That's true.
Right.
This was filmed by somebody else?
That scene is, from what I understand, that was not shot by Nicholas Meyer.
Well, they went two shots. It was the far shot and the close shot.
I can never decide. I never have been able to tell Rob. I thought that too, and then other things it seemed like he did, but he kind of was against it. But I know he didn't shoot the very, very end.
He doesn't shoot the scene with the coffin on the planet.
Right. That's for sure.
Because apparently they previewed it for David Geffen, Jeffrey Katzenberg, who was the head of Paramount. And he said, it's too dark. It ends with no hope. It's too funereal. We have to give the audience some hope. And then that's when they said, let's tip it that maybe Spock survived. And so they went in and added that.
And then in the credits,
why that Contra stuff needed to be there to add that moment. Like, the maybe Spock is going to be alive thing would have worked without it. Mm. I mean, I like the Contra stuff. It's awesome, and it gets played out.
This
really
is well. Awesome. I love this effect of the radiation.
The radiation blowing his face. Yeah. So
what
cool.
What is Spock doing, though, exactly? That's what I'm always
trying. We never really...
Flip of a switch.
He's like changing a battery, basically.
Right. Yeah, like moving the dilithium crystals around and shaking them up, or what's he doing?
You didn't have any robots to send in there.
Yeah, good point. Yeah.
This conclusion makes only slightly less sense to me than the conclusion of Trading Places. I've seen that movie 1,000 times with the stock, and I still don't understand what they're doing in that movie. It's the same kind of thing. I just accept it. I'm like, all right, Spock had to do something, and it's
fine. No, it's fine. Spock's he's moving the doodads around to make it work.
There you go.
He's fixing the Bluetooth.
Why would space create static? Why would a nebula create static on a view screen? Isn't that like broadcast TV create static?
They need to put the rabbit ears up.
There's a test pattern comes up with an Indian's face on it.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
I speak my last breath.
Now, all right, this is where I'm going to say this movie has a flaw, and it's a minor flaw.
What?
I think, okay, we'll get to it in a second when it comes up. It's a very minor flaw, but I just think there was one little bit here coming up. The Major back online. Go Sulu. There needs to, in my opinion, there needs to be a shot right now of Khan watching the Enterprise get away.
Oh,
he doesn't see it? Okay.
No, we never see him see it. Yeah, I think you need to have one shot of him going, oh, shit, and then the thing blows up. Not literally, of course. But I mean that he goes to his grave knowing that Kirk got one
is
up.
Is that in
one
the extended time. Director's cut, maybe? No. That just feels like something that should be there.
Yeah, you're right. Like the giant eyes. Like he's like, oh.
Yeah, just that, something that he.
I love this.
This is great.
The rain,
yeah,
it's beautiful. It's great.
Yeah. But yeah, you're right. That
just something that Khan, we know that Khan knows. Did not
get his jacket on.
It's because they slept together.
Why?
That's
why are you wearing a winter jacket on the bridge? Is it cold in there? Because it's cold in space? I don't think it's cold.
The collars popped. They had sex, guys. It's code.
Guys love it when chicks wear their shirts. That's just the thing guys love. And it's
He's wearing his Letterman jacket.
Putting his boots back on, like on the TV show, and then like the classic series, right?
So. There you go. Oh, here we go.
I think you better get down here.
He hasn't noticed that Spock hasn't been on the bridge for like the last 10 minutes.
Well, he's been kind of busy, you know?
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
And people come and go. I mean, you know, maybe it's time for Spock's coffee break. Or
why
whatever.
Does Savick take the Khan and not Sulu?
That's a bit of a diss, isn't it?
Sulu's the next in command after Scotty. Or at this point, he might be above Scotty in command. I don't know.
Yeah, especially if they're working him towards command in the scripts. Yeah.
Right.
Get out of my way. I'm going to slide down this ladder.
Get out of my way, punk.
This man has actually been to space.
That's true.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Here we go. Here, Scotty dropping the truth bomb here.
Yeah, he's dead already.
He's dead already.
That Bones was supposed to deliver, say he's dead, Jim, but DeForest Kelly said, I can't say that. It's too much of a trope, and it'll get laughs out of people. You don't want that. And so they gave the line to Scotty.
He's right.
That's true.
Exactly
right.
Yeah.
Look at DeForest Kelly. Big grin on him.
That would have made this, that really could have messed this beautiful moment up. Yeah, yep. For sure.
I love they have like a little intercom and stuff. It's really,
This to me is still the only death scene that loses nothing, even though you know it's undone in the next movie. It still retains all of its power, despite knowing. What happens? Yeah. Every other death.
I agree.
You know,
this is such a great performance from both of them. Yeah. Well, and it's highlighting how great its performance is when
he comes out of the door.
How poorly Chris Pine and Quinto do this reverse version of the scene.
Yeah.
It's just.
They never should have done that. They never
should have never should have done that.
That whole second movie is a disaster. But
I am in that movie audience for anybody, so I can diss it, so it's fine.
That's why it's a disaster.
Yeah, probably.
So even though Nimoy's makeup is not exceptional here, the performances are unbelievable.
What's wrong with the makeup?
The makeup's believable to me.
Yeah. Really?
Well, yeah, what's wrong with the makeup? I like that. The skin is starting to decay. I think that's...
Skin is falling off. Yeah. That's what I always look at this.
Apparently they were going to go gorier with it, but they decided that it was just too... That was too.
I think this was just the right amount of what you wanted. And God, this scene is so well acted, filmed.
Yeah, well, this is beautiful. Is Shatner giving it much other than his mouth hanging open? I mean, Nimoy's doing most of the heavy lifting here.
No, he's eating. No. To me, they're both bringing it.
Okay,
I think. Yeah. Spock gets the more Shatner, to do because he's the one dying. But
this is like Shatner's best work on Star Trek, here.
When David is dead and he falls off the chair, that's his best moment right there.
Oh, that is a beautiful moment too.
And they had to film that a zillion times, and finally, it was because Shatner was exhausted and just couldn't care anymore. That's when they got it right.
Oh, he was like, I just don't care about David. I can't.
No. He was just over it. They had filmed the scene so many times.
I love that he can't quite do the hand. I think that's a nice, just kind of.
Yeah.
And Kirk doesn't even try and do the hand. He just gives him his hand. Yeah. Like,
oh, man. Oh,
this is how it's going to be for you and me, Rob. When we
This is. Yeah,
I feel like this would be like watching your dog get euthanized or something. It's
Jesus
Christ. God, wow. For anyone who's had to do that, that hurts, man.
You're all watching, you know. It's
but not being able to touch him. That's the
right.
That I love that. Yeah. That's great. Yeah. I love the look destitute he looks.
And he just that one
that
most beautiful ending for this movie. Like
so to take it a little serious for a second. One of my coworkers passed away last year, and during his funeral, his son gave a really nice eulogy and ended it with, "Of all the souls I've encountered, my dad's was the most human." And they immediately went into the same tune.
Oh my lord.
Yeah. I never knew they were huge Star Trek fans. And it turns out they were. Him and his dad, we watched Star Trek together.
Oh Jesus.
It's a great eulogy.
Look at Savick. Tears.
I love that we will not debate his profound wisdom. Yeah, this is it totally still works.
Great.
It just completely still works.
And no movie would let them draw this scene out this long nowadays. And yet here it's necessary to feel it.
Yeah. they would just cut this to ribbons now. We would have to have a bunch of shots.
I don't know, guys. Think about Endgame in the funeral scenes with Tony Stark, you know? So it's not that different than this.
There was a lot of long panning moments, but was there a lot of...
Wasn't that Endgame scene like nothing? Yeah, it was just the whole cast showed up to be shot on the same day for the funeral, but it was fast. But, I mean,
they did give it some you know, some space, so...
Yeah, I mean, there's some long pans, but I just, like, I'm talking about, like, the delivery and everything. Oh, but, But, no, you make a fair point. That's a moving point in Endgame.
Spock, now, I mean, you really need this here. Like, there is not enough space between Spock dying and the movie ending. Endgame gives you a little more space.
Yeah. Do you think Spock would have been slightly insulted that Kirk told him he was the most human? I think he would have raised an eyebrow and said, really, Captain, you know, really, you know, Admiral. Or something.
If anyone else had said it, maybe so. But it's for him, at this point, it's Jim, you know? Right.
Yes, yeah, pretty presumptuous of Kirk and Bones to, you know, just dispose of his body like that. And
that's what Sarek says to him, like, what the hell, dude? Mm-hmm. You couldn't have brought him back home? What?
it is kind of crazy when you think about it. It's like,
now, but here, I mean,
it is the
cracked lenses. That's going to
make, they're going to be a lot less valuable.
Yeah, exactly right. Is that a lot?
Two lenses, one's broken, Spock's gone.
And they will be again.
Wow. Yeah. Right, they will be again.
So I guess at some point, Carol told him, hey, that's your dad.
Right.
Yeah, by the way.
I think it was right after the funeral is probably when it was.
Yeah, you know that guy that you almost knifed to death? Yeah, that's your dad.
He was like, well, I guess I better pull my pants up over my belly button to meet him.
Right. Here comes the world's most awkward father-son hug ever.
Oh, yeah. It is.
It's appropriate, though, because, I mean, like, Kirk just doesn't get how to be a dad.
Yeah, yeah. I watched Square Peg, so I knew who Merritt Buttrick
was. Yeah, I used to watch that show, yeah.
Yeah, that was a fun show. I liked that show.
Yep.
Square Peg, Square Peg.
Square Peg, Square. Square.
I remember it, too.
Yep. That was produced by one of the original SNL writers, Ann Beatts. She produced that show. That's how Bill Murray shows up on it, because Bill Murray showed up as a teacher in one episode. And
isn't Sarah Jessica Parker in that?
Yep.
She's one of the leads. Yep, so David's outfit always looks like it needs a badge there or something.
Yeah,
like, looks like it's missing something.
His ID like card,
his name tag.
Hi, my name is David.
Would say David right there. Yeah.
Yeah.
He does look like he could be their kid. That's what's great about him. I mean, it's like, he's a good actor. I mean, of course, but he fits like, okay, this could be the son of Kirk and Carol Morgan.
Yeah, it's plausible that they are. He looks genetically like.
The perm helps.
Yeah, the perm Carol helps and blonde hair helps, but yeah, it does. Yeah.
Yeah, nothing's gonna be. You Klingon bastard! You killed my son. You Klingon bastard! You killed my son. Yeah, sorry, I'm still hung up on that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's oof. Yeah.
I mean, I guess, but it's to like John Larroquette and like,
yeah, this is right here. Brown. This is footage of when Shag and I met for the first time, right here. This is what I
like. Well, Kirk is bald. I mean, Shatner is bald in real life. So there we go.
Yeah. Oh man!
Damn, this movie's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, now we got a more upbeat ending. Like, this is how you got to end it. You got to end it on a little bit of an up note, because otherwise you're just depressed. It's just like, oh my God, they killed Spock.
We also have Kirk's journey, where he said he felt old in the beginning, and now he feels young.
And he feels young.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you feel like you lose Spock, but you're supposed to like gain David, kind of.
And feel Savick.
Like, I got David, I got Savick, and you do, and then they're right back in action in the next movie, and... then they're not.
Well, you would assume Carol would hang around. You're like, you're thinking this is phase two coming up, right?
In Star Trek V, I know it's Star Trek V, but Kirk says, I lost a brother once, forgetting that he actually did lose a brother on the series. But
right, exactly right.
Oh, damn.
Yeah.
I love Shatner's read on this. Somebody's trying to tell me. Mm-hmm. My birthday. Just the way he just kind of emphasizes on my birthday. And here he goes.
Shatner is a good actor. Yes, he can dial it up too much sometimes, but he isn't actually – anybody that says Shatner's a bad actor is full of crap. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think it's a fusion of this – who else could play this – I mean, yes, obviously Chris Pine, but like – it's a fusion of a role, and you can't imagine anybody else playing these parts. And he's just so identified with this.
Right.
What he did in the original performance, he just was like, what do you want me to do? Let me try and figure out how to do that. And gave us magic.
Yeah.
Now, that's it. This is all added. This was all stuff that Nicholas Meyer did not shoot because he didn't like that it was so clearly leading to a sequel. But I honestly think it gives the film an uplift.
Oh yeah,
that it would not have had.
It works better with it than without it.
Yes,
absolutely. Well, that and the credits in a minute are going to say, you know, coming soon, Star Trek III: The Search for Spock, kind of gives it away. But
does it? When does it say that in these credits?
Is it in the credit?
No,
we'll find out in a minute.
No, it might
say Star Trek III. I don't think it says The Search for
Spock.
Did they
already start filming Star Trek III when they?
No, they did not, because they didn't think that. Because this thing was a gargantuan hit.
They didn't think that this was gonna. There was gonna be another one. They were gonna put this on TV originally.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Shatner. Nimoy figured, well, this is the last movie anyway, so why don't you just?
Yeah. Then I'm out. Now this is a great touch, getting Spock to do the crawl. Right.
I love this. It's
such a nice touch because it does kind of suggest. Oh, wait a minute. You know,
he's out there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
go get him. Yeah, he's.
I love this effect too, with the warping of the space. The way
How did they shoot that? You got to wonder.
I think some of that was shot in a planetarium. I think that they literally went to a planetarium and
there you
like,
go. Here we go. Now we're pulling in. This is great.
Oh, that's
and the music
cool.
is swelling.
Yeah.
And then whammo,
boom,
and then we get our credits.
So if there's really not something in the credits here where they say, you know,
I don't think there is
search for Star Trek III, The Search for Spock, then I have a memory of something that never happened, like sort of like the flying creatures.
Yeah, I was about to say that credit appears by the flying bird that I didn't see. It's the same thing.
Ike Eisenman, that's the actor's name that was the Scotty's nephew. I couldn't think of his name while we were talking about it, but yeah, the kid from Witch Mountain, Escape from Witch Mountain movies.
Oh, we did it, guys. We made it through.
There's a lot of, like, I noticed towards the end of the movie, like, especially after, like, Khan was there's, like, a lot of points where we're not talking. Because we're just enjoying the film.
Yeah.
Right. You know, at that point. Right.
Yeah. One of my favorite details when I read about, like, when they were making this movie was that, you know, they hired Harve Bennett, you know, and he wasn't a huge Trek fan either. And he was like, well, what am I? So he said he sat down at the Paramount lot and watched all 79 Star Treks in a row. And I thought, man, that sounds like a good job. You know,
it's the Peter Sanderson of Star Trek, right?
You could sit there and watch Star Trek and be like, I'm working right now. what a gig, you know?
I genuinely know people who have had that job.
I'm gonna bang my head against this microphone. But I mean, it's just like the idea that between Harve Bennett knowing, you know, like you said, we need a villain. The first film didn't have a villain. As you said, it was a tone poem. We need a villain, and then hiring Nick Meyer, and Nick Meyer just brought so much to this. It really is. And then again, and then Nimoy being willing to kind of doing it for quote sort of the wrong reasons, kind of willing to die just to get Star Trek off his back is kind of for the wrong reason to do it. And yet it worked out perfectly. You know what I mean? This movie kept kind of falling upwards. You know, every time they would make a decision, it ended up working. And then even the thing about where it got leaked that Spock was going to die and they decided to rewrite the script and stick Spock in the beginning and dying. So like, oh, we fooled everybody. Like everything just kept working in this movie's favor.
I think originally in the beginning, that they didn't know if Leonard Nimoy was going to do this movie or not. Because he wasn't contracted to do it or anything. So I think one of the very first scripts, he doesn't even appear in it, Spock. But it's actually how Savick becomes a character. Savick's originally written as a male character. And I think it's in the third draft that somebody makes Savick into a female character, which is the only thing I think that Nick Meyers keeps from that draft. But Spock might not have even been in this at one point.
Well, phase two was going to have a different Vulcan. Right. And they kind of killed him off in motion picture, didn't they? Or at least conceptually?
The actor played a different character in the motion picture.
Oh, okay. All right.
He's barely in it. So he went from being like the new Spock to like having a bit part in the movie.
Oh,
being squelched.
The Pete Best of Star Trek. That's got to be rough.
Yeah. Nobody wants the rough job of being the new Spock. Trust me, I know.
Little inside baseball there for you folks. All right, so I guess I'm imagining this stupid scene credit that said like in the Star Trek Will Return and Star Trek 3, the search for Spock.
I mean, maybe if they reissued this at some point, they did that, you know?
Are you sure you're not just thinking of Back to the Future?
I think I saw something like in like they didn't even say Star Trek 2 in like the early prints of this. It just said Star Trek, The Wrath of Khan when it first came up.
Wow.
And they added the 2 because officially that was the name of the title, but it was, you know, the movie. But so who knows? There might be a version that says, you know, coming soon, Star Trek.
Nick Meyer's original pitch for the title on this that he wanted was Undiscovered Country.
Yep.
Right. Right. Yep.
Really?
Yep. Yep. Yeah.
But I mean, he clearly gets his wish later on. So
yes,
never throw anything away.
Exactly.
In my opinion, and nothing against Voyage Home, in my opinion, the second best Star Trek movie. So, but because I love the Voyage Home too, but I like 2 and 6 best myself. So.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, I do like seeing that Klingon blood like floating in the air in Part 6.
Christopher
Plummer.
Oh, just chewing every piece of furniture he can find and loving every minute of it. He's awesome.
The second best Star Trek villain, Christopher Plummer.
He's marvelous in that movie.
I'd have to give the credit to the little earworm, Chris.
Oh, okay.
So, Shag, I don't think it's going to say
Star Trek 3. No, this is not a James Bond movie. They don't.
Oh, wait, I can see it on mine. Oh, it's right here on mine. I see it.
Oh, sure.
Okay. Watch party. Yeah, right.
Like you said, it's right next to that flying creature.
Well, there it is, everybody. That Woo! Is Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. I mean, in a world where nerds fight about everything nowadays, I mean, just everything, this is like one of the rare movies that I feel like has a universal... no one doesn't like this movie. You know what I mean? Has there been anybody you've ever met that doesn't like this movie? Maybe if you don't like Star Trek, but you shouldn't, yeah, then you're not gonna like it anyway. But anyone who likes Star Trek, is there anybody that I love Trek 4? It's my favorite Trek movie, but I know there's some people say it's too light, it's too calm, you know, whatever. But I've never met anybody that has any time for Star Trek that says, oh, Trek 2 is not great. You know, I just don't, I can't imagine somebody saying that.
No, I honestly can't. It's like, you know, I guess in that regards, it is a little bit like the Empire Strikes Back of
there you go.
Yeah. Yeah. There's people that argue Empire Strikes Back's not as good as Star Wars. So no, that's fair. Right. Ooh, mine started over. This is the best watch party ever. I could watch it again. So who is going to leave here and kick off Star Trek 3 before they go to bed? Come on. I am. Well, it's because watch parties ended. Rob, I was going to rewatch it.
I might read my comic book. That's like the Star Trek Mirror Universe one, where it does its like own sequel to Part 3. I think right. It's like they do their own sequel instead of.
Are you talking about the DC Comics one?
Maybe it was the DC Comics. Yeah. I have like I have like a graphic novel for it.
Yeah.
I always remember just wanting that to have actually been like, even though I loved Star Trek IV, I wanted that to be the sequel instead because it was the Mirror Universe and it had Savick in it and David. No, David was dead, but it had Savick. Anyway, whatever.
Those DC Comics are fantastic. They're really good.
Yeah, that's what I said about them. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Rob. This was a blast. I hope the people at home got something out of it. I think most people probably wouldn't even have to play the movie to know what we're talking about at any given moment.
No, this was something I said. I've been loving doing these commentaries. They've just been really fun, and there's going to be more coming. By the way, everybody, I got a bunch more planned for this year, and sometimes I don't get too bogged down in like anniversaries or like is there a specific time to do it. Sometimes I just want to talk about a certain movie, but when I realized that Wrath of Khan is now 40, I was like, well, I can't pass this up. I mean, it's just too good. This movie is just completely flawless. And by the way, one last thing, I had heard in one of the, I think it's in the Shatner book, that the whole idea of the Genesis planet that they, you know, the Enterprise, the Federation comes up with this thing that can create planets was an offhanded suggestion by like a crew member. Yeah. Now, I don't know whether that is true or not, but it's like, man, if it was, I hope that guy got a check. Because, I mean, good Lord, they got a trilogy out of it, basically, if it was just some guy's tossed off idea.
I think it was Mike Minor who was the art director. I think they had one of the drafts had something called the Omega System, which was this big weapon. And then they said, well, we'll creating this big weapon. And he said, well, what if they had like a terraforming, project or something? And, and like, I guess Harv Bennett like kissed him or something. And
I hope he got more than that. Cause
good job.
Yeah. Know, no, like, that's the story I heard. It was that, because it worked out great. Cause the idea was that it was about a big weapon that Khan wanted to get. But the idea that you're taking something that's not intended as a weapon, but that's what he's going to use it as, is so much stronger.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And Mike Minor had worked on the original series some too. He had worked on some things for the third season, like the Melkoshians and the Tholian web and things like that. So yeah, so he came back full circle. So that's a young guy on the original series that just kind of pitched in and really did good in this one. So good on him.
I mean, yeah, they got a trilogy out of it. I mean, they really did, you know, and it's really the only time I can think of any film series where there is like a trilogy buried inside a larger series.
Right.
I mean, I guess they're kind of doing that with the Daniel Craig, James Bond movies at this point, but even that's a little different because they sort of shook the Etch-a-Sketch with him and started over. But I rewatched 2, 3, and 4 a couple of weeks ago, just one right after the other. And it's just, these things are just tonally, they hold up perfectly. It's just unreal how well this worked out.
I heard some of the creators describing it not as science fiction, but space opera is how they described it, and which is pretty fitting for just the drama and everything that's in it.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
I concur with that. Yeah, it's definite space opera.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we've been going on long enough. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Of course, you can find all the back episodes of the Film and Water Podcast on our website, fireandwaterpodcast.com. We're always talking movies on Twitter at Film and Water Pod. And of course, if you want to support the Fire and Water Podcast Network, just go to patreon.com/FW Podcast, and there you're going to lock various rewards, one of which is to be name checked on a show of your choice. So big thanks to Gord Tolton, David S. Gutierrez, and Corey Musa for his support of the Film and Water Podcast. I very much appreciate it, Corey. That's why you've been on the show 3 times in a row.
That's right. I've
done that before.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you want to participate, you've got to start donating money.
Absolutely. I want that stenciled on a pillow.
You've got to go to that Patreon page and you've got to click that link, guys. You've got to give. You've got to give. It's really important.
I love you. So, guys, again, thank you all so much for doing this. This was just a total blast. I mean, as you were joking about, Corey, like, I kind of want to do commentaries for 3 and 4 this year, even though they don't have anniversaries. I'm just so excited. I'm like, oh, I'd love to talk about 3 and 4. And who knows, maybe we'll even do that as the year rolls on. But anyway, like I said, there's going to be more commentaries coming, everybody. Let us know what you thought of our talk over Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, over on our website, fireandwaterpodcast.com. So again, gentlemen, thank you so much for joining me on this episode.
Thank you so much for having us, Rob. And I just want to say, I will chase you round the moons of Nibia and round the Antares maelstrom and round perdition's flame before I give you up.
I always say about Jack, he tasks me. He tasks me. Always happening. It's always going on. So again, thanks guys so much. This was just a blast.
Thank you.
Sure! This is an echo. Sorry, all right, we'll be doing this forever. Thanks everybody for listening. We will see you later. Until the next episode, that's a wrap.
Then you never faced that situation. Face death.
I don't believe in the no-win scenario. Kirk to Spock, it's 2 hours. Are you ready?
Right on schedule, Admiral. Just give us your coordinates and we'll beam you aboard.
All right. I don't like to lose.